Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 166. We're back for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 3, episodes 19, Choices, and 20, The Prom. And yes, it is me, Selena, again. I've just taken over, guys. Not really. I'm back with last week's hosts, Mitch and Caitlin and Brittany. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
So much Buffy we get to talk about. I'm excited. I know Karen wrote to me and she was like, I'm so sorry I'm making you pull all this weight. And I was like, I know, it's so hard for me. I just get to talk about all the Buffy episodes that I love.
How dare you make me talk about The Prom.
I know, right?
The worst ever.
These are going to be really fun. And I really love, kind of like how you were saying, Brittany, you didn't spoil yourself on anything with Cursed Child. I've spoiled myself 0% on Adiana synopsis or the upcoming episodes. So we're going to have a lot of fun, like, first reactions going on here, guys. This is going to be so cool. I love her synopsis so much.
He hasn't even seen the episodes yet, so it's going to be extra fun.
I almost didn't see the episodes before doing this. I didn't watch the previous two, so this should be fun.
You haven't?
Oh, God.
I ran out of time. I was on vacation, and then I got back, and then I went to see Finding Dory yesterday instead of doing my rewatchable duties.
What do you think is happening?
I feel like that, like, disqualifies you.
I read the Buffy guide synopses.
That's not good enough. Anyway, I'm not here to police you. I'm just here to be sad. But whatever, I'm still excited about what you're talking about the episodes. Before we get into our fun facts, we're going to do contact information. You can email us, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @re_watchable. You can find this post on hyperpool.com. And you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Starting with fun facts this week, let's see what Caitlin's been up to.
Like I said last week, I'm doing nothing but working right now. So my fun fact is that I got a Supergirl Funko, and now it's sitting on my desk next to my Flash, so Kara and Barry can be best friends on my desk, just like they are on the TV show.
Amazing. And Brittany, what about you?
I just got back from Mexico, and I don't think I can eat tacos or guacamole for at least 6 months. I ate so much food. It was unbelievable, but also very relaxing.
Amazing. I have to ask, are you going to watch those other two Buffy episodes, or?
You know, probably not.
But aren't you, like, missing some great character moments and stuff?
You know, probably not.
I think you probably are.
Wait till you hear my reactions to these two episodes, and then we'll talk.
Well, that's going to be very exciting. Mitch, what's your fun fact?
Well, I feel that Brittany, you might want to go back. You might want to go back because Earshot was pretty good, and we have a lot of Danny Strong stuff going on in there. That's pretty fun. My fun fact is that yesterday I got to try a virtual reality helmet out for the first time. It's one of those newer, like, high-tech ones. And I got to, like, walk around underwater, and I don't know if anyone's seen the commercials, but you can paint in the air. It's all within, like, your goggles, but you're painting in the air. And you can walk through your painting and make gorgeous little masterpieces. And obviously I'm Van Gogh, so everyone was so amazed watching me do it. Oh. And I would highly suggest going to a Microsoft store, Best Buy, and trying out their virtual reality helmets, because that technology is so cool. It blew my mind, and it made me feel like I wasn't even in the mall anymore. It was such a strange experience, but it was so awesome.
That sounds really cool.
Oh, my God,
really,
yes.
That's a really fun fact, actually. That's really cool. My fun fact is that I went to Sweden today, and it was nice and way prettier than Denmark, and then I went home. So that's my story. Let's talk about Buffy, which is going to be exciting. We're going to start with Choices, which is actually, you know, I always forget how much I love this episode, but I genuinely do, so I'm very excited to get into talking about it. Before we do, let us read the short synopsis by Ariana, which goes... In this episode, Buffy steals a box, but Faith steals Willow. And the big question is, what is more valuable, the box or Willow? But then Oz throws a vase and it is decided. They make a trade with the mayor and giant spiders attack, and all would seem lost except Willow stole some pages about the mayor's ascension. And that is why she is Giles's favorite. So short and sweet synopsis for Choices. And the first thing we should get into talking about is obviously Faith's whole deal. Obviously, she's now, like... totally in love with the mayor in this like super creepy father-daughter kind of way. You know, she tells Willow at the end, like, I got him now, you know, clearly feeling like that's all she needs. So my first question to you guys is, like, why do you guys think that Faith takes to the mayor so quickly as she does? What do you think, Mitch?
Well, seeing as it's Father's Day, this is an appropriate conversation to have.
It is.
Maybe not, because I feel a little bit of a sexual tension going on here. I really do. It starts to feel a little bit like, I don't know, like she even calls him sugar daddy. I feel like she would go there and she would enjoy it for the fact that it's like a taboo kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's like a power thing that she gets to sleep with such a powerful man who's so immortal. And, well, you know, that's probably cool to her. I mean, maybe she wants to have like a really cool baby or something from the mayor. And that's an alternative plot we're going to see. And that'll be a really fun thing, I guess, if we have a supernatural baby. I'm sure it's bound to happen. So why not like let it be Mayor and Faith's baby? Happy Father's Day, everyone.
Interesting.
Some Breaking Dawn stuff going on there.
I know.
It does feel a little Breaking Dawn, doesn't it?
Very Breaking Dawn. Maybe Mitch is theorizing that's how they got the idea.
Stephenie Meyer not only stole everything else from Twilight, but she also stole the baby plot line. So
yeah. Renesmee, hashtag Renesmee is coming. I do think it's interesting you say that, like, Faith would go there, because I think that's how she trivializes relationships. And honestly, I think one of the reasons why the mayor feels so special to her is that she is so starved for this kind of love and this kind of attention. You know, like, she saw, obviously what Buffy and Giles have is totally different, but it is that, like, surrogate dad daughter relationship too. And I think, you know, the fact that he refuses to go there with him and or with her, and the way he sort of scolds her a little bit, but not too much, and he makes her do all the fun killing stuff. I think it is like the perfect scenario for her, and I think she loves it. I think she needed that, as evil as it is. Would you say that's fair, Caitlin?
I think so. Even Willow makes a comment near that in the episode saying, like, you had a rough childhood, whatever, blah, 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 which is a great moment. But yeah, I think for her, and I talked about this a little last week, but I think for Faith too, it's a lot of she's ended up on the side and there's no really going back. So she's just going to jump in full force. Like, she doesn't really do anything half-assed. So she's got her side and she is going to go for it with everything that she has. That's just who she is.
He also gives her a giant knife.
That is a sweet knife.
I love how much she likes that knife. It's like a pony, but for Faith, that's like what she would want.
Now I'm starting to think of it as a phallic object. I don't think I'm too far off here, am I?
I mean, for her, probably a knife and a stake and all of those things in Buffy kind of are phallic objects, if you want to see them that way. I think they've done a pretty good line of avoiding that with a stake. You know what I mean? Like, so far, it could very, very easily, like, they've sidestepped it very well.
Up until Faith goes, I get so hot and horny whenever I'm staking vampires.
Well, yeah.
And I'm thinking about it now. And if you wanted to think about it in terms of Faith taking on what might be considered like a classic male role in a TV show, in terms of a male villain being kind of creepy and rapey like she was to Willow in that one scene, she holds a knife up to her face. That could be seen as being phallic. And I think that could have been represented that way. It's not to say I'm not looking to be anti-feminist here. I guess I'm not even looking to be pro. I'm looking to observe what I think the context of the show is with using a knife in what I felt was a bit of a rapey scene. It definitely had to me, once again, a sexual connotation to it.
It's interesting you say that, because I think that's the thing that we're sort of the male thing. I wouldn't agree with you by any means, but I see where you're coming from, because basically a knife is power. Like, we saw exactly the same thing with Xander in the Zeppo with the guy Jack, and he did the same thing Faith did to Willow in this episode, and Xander even said, the difference between you and me is that you have the big knife, you know. And I think that's what the knife is. Power is quote-unquote masculine. This show is all about subverting those gender stereotypes, and I appreciate
is what I'm saying.
I do as well.
That Buffy takes a character like Faith and says, You may have seen this before used, you know, for men saying, look at my penis size. Don't you have penis envy of how powerful I am? But here it's just like, screw that. We're going to just have a woman that's powerful because she has a knife, and you can look at it that way. But, you know, the fact of the matter is she can be just as evil as any other man could, because that's not the gender's not the part that matters here. It's the power. It's the size of the knife. It's the intimidation.
Yeah, and it feels even trivializing it, saying it out loud, because obviously at this point in media culture, we're used to that, you know, but yeah. At this point, I think it was that you make an interesting point. It's very valid.
I can almost get into this headspace where this is a newer thought from the fact that, I mean, I can kind of think back to when I was really young and like how TV shows were then, like cartoons and whatnot, and this kind of role was a little bit less common. Now it's very common, I appreciate that there is a growing diversity, not an extreme fairness going on, but in terms of gender roles and let's just say
how vicious Faith is. It's a good point. Like, yeah, she is also a very sexual creature. I mean, we can't deny that. But yeah,
But it's not powerful. It's not in terms of like, I mean, this is tough business because like I like the way that Faith is sexualized, not in, I don't know, it's tough to even find the words here because I don't want to say like. She just sleeps with people to get what she wants. She uses her sex as a power in a certain way, which I know can often be looked down upon in certain forms of media. So I'm not quite sure how I feel about that she tries to sleep with people to get what she wants. That starts to feel a bit tropey to me.
Well, but I don't think she does. She doesn't do that. She sleeps with people because she wants to. Like her power doesn't come from that. I think that's sort of the distinction that we're meant to make.
Well, what about, I mean, we're saying Willow, the mayor. Maybe, but then most definitely Angel and sometimes Buffy, but then 100% Xander. She tries to use her sex as a power in a way, and that's where I'm seeing.
Well, I think it's because that's what she wants, the sex. Like, that's kind of like what it is she wants the sex, so she takes the sex. That's kind of like what you know what I mean? But no, I do
think stealing the steaks from the store kind of deal. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I wish we could talk about this all day, but we have a lot. What else? But some interesting points brought up, definitely. So we also learned in this episode that Buffy got into Northwestern, which is interesting, and basically like opens her eyes to the idea of leaving Sunnydale for real, which even though like she's considered it before, I think this sort of brings home that for a second, it feels like a real possibility. And I think it's really interesting to see her sort of flirt with the idea of having a real life. What did you think about that, Brittany?
Well, going along with what Ariana said, that's a joke. She would never get into Northwestern. But I do like the idea of her getting into a school that would take her away from Sunnydale and have that option on the table. And that conversation that she was having with Joyce, where she just lets her mom be happy for a while instead of being like, you know, I can't leave. Like, there's no option for me to get out of here. But having her wrestle with that for even a little bit and trying to play to everyone's like expectations, being like, I'll come back here and I'll fight on Christmas break and spring break and I'll just fly across the country. I'll fight on weekends if you need me to, but I want to get out of here for a little bit. I thought that was an interesting thing. And it's also something that adds another layer to like the classic teen drama when it comes to an end. And well, what are these kids going to do after high school? How are we going to, like, you know, keep a like in terms of like production for a show, not so much what's happening on screen, but like how are we going to keep this going if the person is across the country? And will there still be a reason to have you know, Buffy fighting another Hellmouth in Illinois sort of deal? So it makes you know, everyone consider, like, what would happen if everyone suddenly left? How do we continue this story? And I think that plays well on screen in this case because there is no other location of the Hellmouth. The Hellmouth is in Sunnydale, and that's where she kind of needs to be.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they do a really good job of justifying it, too. Like, they give her enough of a reason to legitimately want to leave, but they also make a very good case for the fact that she has to stay. Like this is it. She's bound to it. And especially now with Faith having gone dark side as she has, like, I think, like, as much as, like, in teen shows, usually it's sometimes it's very, like, very convenient that everyone ends up, you know, staying behind. But I think as far as Buffy goes in this case, like, obviously she has to. The big question is what everyone else is going to do. And we're obviously going to get to that a little bit later, too. And as Ariana notes in the doc, too, like, Giles's face when he finds out that she got into such a good school is just the best of the best. Like, I love him so much. I love everything about his love for Buffy, too.
We also saw in the Wishverse, sorry, Mitch.
No, I was going to call on you, actually, to say something about Veronica Mars and this being akin to what they did, keeping everyone in Neptune by, like, making them all go to the community college. And I don't know if anyone else listened, did Veronica Mars, but you and I.
Indeed, that's a pretty common teen thing. But I was just going to say that in the Wishverse, we saw what happened when Buffy never came to Sunnydale. So I have to imagine we can take that as a clue of what would happen if she left that area.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Good point. We also find out, kind of going along that, that UC Sunnydale is a thing. Surprise! It's one of the best things about, like, the fandom of the show is how we do, you know, over the years, like, Sunnydale kind of has expanded. Obviously, you know, we saw that we went back to the pilot, you know, Cordelia was talking about the Bronze being like, oh, it's like half a block from the good part of town. You know, there's not a whole lot of town. And, you know, it's sort of we get a few more streets here and there. And apparently, yeah, there's a UC Sunnydale. Apparently, that's funny. I don't know why. But
well, we had the frat guys kidnapping high school girls.
Were they from UC Sunnydale? I guess you're right. We did have frats, so that would sort of imply there was a college nearby.
Since it seemed like the college was in the town.
Yeah, that's a good point. Since they were taking girls
from the town.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, there you go. You justified it.
That's cool. Ariana's joke is that there's a bunch of University of California campuses. So there's, like, UC Berkeley, UCLA, UC Santa Barbara. Like, they're all over California, so to add another campus to it is just really convenient for them.
Okay, well, that's actually interesting. I didn't know that. I thought that UC just stood for university, like, you know, it was a separate university.
Interesting. Yeah, it's the University of California. There's a bunch of them, but UCLA is, like, the most famous, and Berkeley is really popular now too.
Oh, I like that a lot. I really, because that sort of again further justifies to me why there is a UC Sunnydale in the first place. So I think that's really cool.
I mean, so, but the time that everyone dies, like, I get the high school might have some like youngins that are you know, raised like pigs for slaughter for said demons and vampires, but I don't think anyone's gonna live past the age of 18 to even get to college, so I don't know why they even are able to justify having a college in the first place.
What do you mean?
Everyone's dead. How do they even have a population for UC Sunnydale?
How is everyone? I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Like, Sunnydale has a high mortality.
Oh, right. Well, I don't know. There's still people around.
Yeah, somewhere. Not everyone at UCLA is from Los Angeles, so I'm sure people fly in to come to University of Sunnydale.
Yeah.
Yeah, they probably just hide the fact that, like, half a student body died in each you know, graduating class of the high school.
Yeah.
So it's probably really easy to get into the school at this point. Like, oh, great, Sunnydale, cool, let's go there.
They probably have, like, a really, really good cafeteria there to, like, really get people, their enrollment up. They're like, but look at our cafeteria, it's so good, ignore the death rate fine print on your brochure.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So moving a little bit along, we have a point about Cordelia here, but I think we can save that for the prom since that all gets resolved there. So the A plot of this episode really is Buffy and the gang coordinating this preemptive strike on the mayor, basically. Buffy is actually the one that comes up with this whole plan. I thought that was pretty great. I always like seeing Buffy take initiative in stuff like this. What do you think, Caitlin?
I agree. I think we often forget that she's really smart, and I actually disagree that she wouldn't get into a good school because we saw that she had really, really high SAT scores. And if you write a good essay, you know, they might overlook some lower grades. So I don't necessarily disagree with that assessment. I think Buffy is surprisingly intelligent sometimes, and it's good to see her put it to use.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I really bother. But yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, Buffy is super smart. And that, I think you see it with Cordelia too. Like, I think people are not just one thing in real life and in the show. And I think, you know, Buffy, the fact that she scored well and she probably wrote a really compelling essay. She has a really good personal story there with her mom and all that crap. So I agree. I don't know about Northwestern. I don't actually know that school, but I think it's nice to see her get some success. But speaking of this plan, though, I mean, again, it is a really good idea, and it actually was very close to succeeding. You know, they go in, they synchronize their non-existent watches, they get the box, but then, of course, Faith gets Willow. And, you know, there's a good question by Ariana in here, which goes, is it better to sacrifice the box that will destroy the world or Willow in this case? And I was wondering what you guys thought about that.
Well, Oz did throw said vase, so... because that's literally the plot point that moves it along. Like, everyone's, like, trying to decide, and it's a big, important decision, and then Oz is just like, I am a werewolf sometimes, rawr. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess we should go save his lover now. Screw the world. And I still think, God, it'd be a tough decision, but, like, they should have kept the box. I don't know what else there really was to it. This is such a common thing in supernatural shows. Like, I was going to say save the cheerleader, save the world, but this is the opposite. Save the world, don't save the cheerleader, essentially. That's where we're at here. You don't see the cheerleader in the situation in the real world. I don't know. This also kind of this starts to feel like to me what even like a real world hostage situation would feel like. Let's just say that there's a prisoner of war that we're trading for X amount of war criminals in whatever country we live in. Metaphorically, you know, when's the trade off good? It's weird territory.
Well, I would sort of. Personally, I really disagree with that because I think that in this case, there's several things going into their decision. I don't think there's a reality in which Buffy would give up Willow for anything, first of all. Like, I think that in this scenario, whatever was at stake, Buffy would save Willow and then try to save the world after that, because that's the kind of person she is. She doesn't make a choice. She chooses, you know, both. But I also think that because... there's such an interesting thing going on with the mayor in this season, and in that he is technically he's evil, but he's not actually doing anything evil yet. Like, it also shows when they do the exchange and they stand around having like a super civil conversation, you know, the fact that they know that something is going to happen to them. He's going to ascend. He's going to do something terrible to the town. Like, it's all kind of abstract because right now they're just standing in front of this dude who speaks to them kindly and washes his hands. And I think, like, the box being the literal saving the world or not, I think it's more complicated than that. Like, I think getting Willow back and saving her is sort of first priority. That saving the world can always happen. You know, they have some time. Like, it's not like literally they have to choose in an instant between the world and Willow. They have to choose save Willow and find another way to save the world. Does that make sense?
I also feel like Willow would be able to save herself, a la the whole pencil bit. And I'm surprised didn't have more tricks up her sleeve for Faith. They made Willow seem suddenly weakened. I get that she's only doing pencil right now. I'm ready for her to do not some Anya-level stuff, but do some Amy-level stuff. Not exactly turn yourself into a rat, because that's really inconvenient now, up until the upcoming finale, which we all know she's going to come back. But I really wish that by now they beefed Willow up. They gave her a little bit more PP. It's a RPG term for anyone who doesn't know, but it means like, you know, ability to use more power, I guess. And if she was able to cast some kind of, I don't even know, like protective spell on Buffy for her birthday, and that's what the whole witch hunt was coming from, and Gingerbread, you think she'd have the power to do a protective spell on herself? I don't know. Maybe that's not going to happen. Because we're going to pretend that never happened. But it seems like when they introduce something like protective spells, given if we had seen it work, I would have been pretty upset, because I would have been like, well, when is anyone going to be in danger? I want to know why Willow isn't doing more by now from a storytelling perspective. I'm ready for her to get to the point where she's not anything of a damsel And let's just say in that moment where, like, Faith punches her in the face, she's able to come back and say, God is hecked, hey, you know, kind of like Amy does, and just come back at her. That would have been really cool. I was ready for that moment to finally happen. I thought it was going to come here. And that's why I wasn't as concerned with him saving Willow, because I really thought she was going to save herself after that pencil moment. It was really cool.
Well, Caitlin, what do you think about Willow's sort of slow progression of magic usage?
I mean, we've had a ton of references from Giles about it being dangerous, and these are not forces you should trifle with lightly. So I feel like this is not something even someone really advanced is going to master in a couple of months. Like, levitating a pencil is one thing. And we saw just a couple episodes ago, like, Willow still has trouble with that, like, when she was having that conversation with Buffy and the pencil was spinning out of control before embedding in the tree. Like, she's still a teenager and she still has a lot of growing up to do, just maturity wise, and that's gonna play into how well she does with magic. And I got the impression she had planned the one with the vampire guard, and so Faith was a complete surprise. So while she could plan to stake that vampire with the pencil, she didn't have that with Faith, because she was gonna try to just get out. She wasn't planning for Faith.
I agree. I completely agree. I think it's great. I really enjoy the slow pace of this. I really enjoy how realistic it is that Willow, someone who, unlike Amy, you know, it's not in her family. It's something she's discovered on her own. It's something that you're seeing her get a little bit better. It's not something that, like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, like, in, again, like Harry Potter, like the spells, they learn them very slowly, one at a time. You know, it's very sort of, it is a skill that you have to master and that you master in increments. And I think about that protection spell, by the way, what she actually did give Buffy was this little satchel of, like, good energy. It didn't seem to be working as a protective spell for Buffy anyway. And that thing she did in the sewers was like she had all those ingredients and stuff. Like, a lot of the stuff Willow does uses, like, ingredients, you know, like potions. So I think just her, with her own inherent ability, what she can do amounts to levitating a pencil right now. And I do understand what you're saying, Mitch, that it would be great to see her have some kind of huge moment, but I actually really enjoy that at this, you know, she's still Willow. Like, she does have some abilities, but she isn't some magical, like, she can beat a slayer in a, like, hand-to-hand combat situation, you know? Like, that's not really how it works. And I think it's great. I think it's really great to see that people have these different levels of power. You know, you even, in the next episode, you even saw it with Xander, too. Like, he sort of bravely pushed Cordelia out of the way and went to tackle that thing, and he, like, got pushed to the side immediately because she doesn't have any power. So I think actually I really enjoyed that. But she does, you know what, Willow does have a lot of skill on her own, and best of all is still her skills of standing up to herself, honestly. Like, she may not have, like, physical power, but she had some amazing mental showdown with Faith. And it is my favorite quote, so I'm not going to say it now, but I just want to say I just love the bravery of Willow here and the catharsis of her standing up to this character that she has hated for so long. And I didn't miss magic at all. I think magic, it would have cheapened the moment for me if she'd been too powerful in that way. Her words would have cut less. But as you say, Oz did throw a vase, another moment that I really loved. And they sort of, that decides it for them. The conversation is over at that point, and they know they have to go and save Willow. And Ariana has a question here in the doc. She says, you know, Oz loves Willow so much, and she wonders if their relationship might be a little bit unbalanced. I don't know what vibe you guys are picking up from that.
Yeah, he did give her that cute little Pezwitch, and she was like, that's adorable, but I'm sleeping with my best friend. So I think that pretty much defines it there for me throughout the entirety of their relationship. That disparity in love doesn't go away. I find that he's always been more attracted to her. He was always checking her out. Like, he thought that she was hot in an Eskimo parka, okay?
Yeah.
Like, that says a lot about a man. that he can see through all that and be like, ooh, let me get some of that Eskimo booty. But she's really only into him because she's like, cool, someone likes me, even though it's not Xander, at least it's someone. Because she seems desperate for affection and attention, and she'll take it from whoever she gets. Now, while she seems that she still loves Oz and is attracted to him and likes him, I don't think that she likes him as much as she would have even liked Xander if he was to come after her, because she treated Xander the way Oz treated her. Willow would have definitely seen Xander in an Eskimo costume and be like, give me some of that Eskimo booty. See, that it's the Eskimo booty metaphor we're looking at here, guys. This is where you need to connect it.
Oz definitely loves Willow to the point where, you know, he even took her back after this cheating thing. Like, he is head over heels for her. That is no question about that. But I wouldn't say that Willow's feelings for Oz are anything less but 100% genuine. I think what it is for Willow is, first of all, there's the whole Xander thing. It's hard for her. She's been in love with him her whole life, and it's still hard for her to let go of that. But it's also probably just really hard for her to accept that someone loves her like Oz does. You know, like, if you put herself in her shoes, like, she has never been wanted that way. And finally, someone comes along who is cool, who is a musician, who is everything that she has sort of learned that will never like her. And he genuinely loves her. And I think she is a bit taken aback by that. I have no doubt that she loves Oz completely. But if we're grading, I think he does probably love her more. But I don't know if we should be grading. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you want to say something about that, Caitlin.
I mean, I've never gotten the impression that she doesn't love him or is using him for convenience. I think there's a lot of real affection and care and concern there. So that surprises me a little because that's never something that has occurred to me. I do see where the idea of an unbalanced relationship might be. But it could just be that we spend so much more time with Willow and getting to know her thoughts, and Oz is so inscrutable. We don't know him that well. We see him through Willow, basically. So yeah. Yeah, we just exactly. know him less. So it's hard exactly. to know as much about their relationship as we do about, like, Buffy and Angel, because we follow their relationship. We don't follow Willow and Oz. So there's a lot there we don't actually know.
Mm-hmm. And it might be, you know, when you look at it, like, Oz, for all we know, Willow is the first, like, the most important person to Oz. But the most important person to Willow is probably Buffy. So in that sense, yeah, I guess they're not on the same level that way. But I don't think, I don't necessarily know if that's so unusual in relationships. I don't know. I just really like this relationship, guys. I don't know if you have anything to add, Brittany.
I just think it says a lot about Willow with her, like, because we've seen her and her mom. Her mom, like, shows zero affection. So Willow showing affection is just, like, being supportive and being there. Like, it's not so much even, like, outwardly being like, I love you and I want to make out all the time and, like, this is the way I show my affection. So I think it just makes sense that this is the way that Willow is showing that she cares. With Buffy, she does all the grunt work and, like, offers a shoulder for Buffy to cry on because that's what she needs. With Xander, it was like, he needs me to just be his pal, so I'll be his pal and I'll do this. Mm. Oz wants her, you know, to be his girlfriend and be there with him, and she cares about these people in her own way. So I don't think it's necessarily imbalanced. It's just that's the way Willow is. She's trying to figure out what Oz needs from her, but she also doesn't know how to fit into the role of girlfriend because, like you were saying, it's not something that she's had experience with, but she sees what other couples want. And mm-hmm. so she's trying to figure out how she can give that to Oz in a way that Oz wants it, and whether that's just holding hands in the hallway or, like, you know, doing something greater, which they both agree is not happening right now. So I think that they're fine.
Yeah, I agree. Ariana also points out that Willow is the best person to be kidnapped in the situation from a plot standpoint, because she is the only person that everyone cares about equally. I really like this observation because, like, Willow is, like, we've sort of determined over this past season that Willow is pretty much the one everyone cares about the most. You know, like, obviously Giles cares most about Buffy, but, you know, Willow is Buffy's favorite person, and Willow is probably Xander's favorite person, or Buffy, I'm not really sure, but I would say I think Willow is Xander's favorite person. Willow is Giles's favorite in a lot of ways, you know, even Wesley can't think of anything bad to say about Willow. I think it's very cool that she's sort of become this emotional center of the group in a way.
Yeah, if Xander was kidnapped, Giles would be like, okay, moving on, we have the box.
Willow, I'm good. Yeah. I mean, it is sort of becoming very apparent that this relationship between Xander and Giles, I mean, talk about convenience, right? Like, literally the only reason they get on is because they're both in this group together, and it's very, very interesting. But yeah, no, Willow, everyone loves Willow, and that works out because I love her too. They do agree on an exchange in the end, and the mayor takes this opportunity to spread some of his fatherly wisdom to Angel and Buffy in the cafeteria where they meet. And basically what happens is he reaffirms that their relationship is doomed. And I just want to ask you guys, is he right? Like, we're going into the next episode, obviously, we're going to talk about this more, but based on this conversation, what were your thoughts about what he had to say here?
No one is going to like my opinion, so I don't want to say it.
I might like your opinion.
I mean, I'm very anti this relationship, so I think, like, in the next episode we'll get to more of this, but I think that the mayor has a lot of really good points, and I think Angel brings up a lot of good points, and this is a hard relationship to pan out, especially because, I mean, I don't know what happens in Angel, but I can only assume that Angel and Buffy don't have a long-distance relationship for 5 or 6 seasons. So, like, the inevitable end is coming, and I feel like this relationship needs to wind down, and seeing the points brought up here, it just makes a lot of sense in, like, you know, they're having this great relationship in, like, metaphorically and almost literally speaking, in the dark. But once you step out into the daylight, you see what's really happening. Like, there's so much going on that Buffy needs to give her attention to, and there's so much going on that Angel just can't be there for her with. And, you know, he's not going to grow old. She is. And there's going to be a lot of stuff that they just can't do together, like go to a farmer's market, unless there's a farmer's market at night somewhere that I don't know about. But, you know, it's just like, there's so much lost for what I feel is very little gained based on what I've seen of their relationship. So I appreciated the mayor in this scene, and I actually really loved the scenes between Buffy and Angel in the next episode, which is something I never thought I'd be able to say again. So after they, you know, I really liked them in the beginning, but then I was over it.
Well, why do you guys think that the mayor comes out and says these things? Like, do you think some part of him genuinely cares, or is she trying to throw them off?
Oh, well, when Buffy's a mess, she can't really focus, or she gets, or he at least maybe thinks that. But as we saw with her having to, like, you know, face Angelus and stuff, she can also go the complete opposite and become, like, ruthless. So I think that his mindset is, oh, if she's in, like, an emotionally fragile state, this ascension thing will go off a lot easier, because she'll be worried about trying to think through this relationship as opposed to maybe giving her full attention to what I'm doing. And it sort of takes away, because like we were saying before, she is smart and she can figure things out. So if she's even a little bit off of her game, it just makes it that much easier.
Yeah. I like to think he cared, like, you know, because he mentioned his own wife and stuff. And I'm like, I always like to think that he's like genuinely some part of his, like, the same sort of dad vibe that he gives up to Faith, like, sort of is genuine in a way, you know, like, I don't know if it is. I can't decide. But
well, I think that kind of goes along with the vagueness of, like, you know, what his plan is, because we're not at this moment, at least the newbies aren't, like, you know, oh, he's going to, like, you know, we don't know what kind of demon he's going to be. We don't know what he wants to do. We don't, like, there's that huge question mark. So it, does he actually care? Maybe he does. Maybe he's going to become this, like, beautiful butterfly and just fly away after the ascension and never bother anyone ever again. And then that would mean, oh, he really does care about Buffy and Angel's future. But mm-hmm. if he's going to come back and, like, you know, just put Sunnydale into a sinkhole and kill everyone with, like, a wink, then no, he actually doesn't care, and he's just trying to emotionally manipulate this poor teenage girl. So, right. Yeah.
Yeah, that might be. You know, I love too, and you guys can speak to this too, but I love how it's always other people telling Buffy and Angel what, like, is best for them, you know? Like, we had Spike do it earlier, like, in this season. We have the mayor doing it. We have Joyce doing it in the next episode. And we even kind of have Willow doing it in the next episode, too. And it's ultimately, like, they wouldn't have gotten there on their own. You know, I kind of do like that. I don't know how you feel about this, Caitlin. I mean, other than heartbroken.
Yes, this is my ship. This is one of the first ships that I ever shipped. However, I have mixed feelings, which maybe I'll elaborate with the next episode. But it's kind of, on the one hand, I've always gotten the impression he was kind of sincere in this scene. So this was my favorite scene, so I guess I can just talk about why I like it now. Mm-hmm. Like, it does feel sincere to me. Like, he just has that weird, like, fatherly vibe that it's the same voice and type of things that we see him saying to Faith that he says to both Buffy and Angel. So the tone doesn't shift. So, which is what feels kind of genuine to me. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I also feel like, why is it any, like, I think logically, on a pure logic level, he makes sense. Like, everyone who is saying this is not going to work, it makes sense for these reasons. And I see that. But it also is kind of presumptive to say, I know more about your relationship than you, the people in the relationship, do. And it rubs me the wrong way, especially in the next episode, that people are making decisions for Buffy, which, you know, it should be, at the end of the day, if it's going to end, it should be the choice of the people, both parties, since it needs to be amicable for obvious reasons with the spinoff coming up. So, like, it rubs me the wrong way that that so many of the characters get presumptive about their relationship. We don't know how it could turn out. So nobody does. So I do find it a little presumptive, but on a logical level, I do think he's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair. I think that's fair to say. But yeah, we'll get into much more of that in the next episode. But there was a couple of more things I wanted to touch on with this one. It is, first of all, I mean, obviously after the mayor sort of lets out, you know, we have all that spider stuff going on and they fix it all up and they save it. And before they leave, Faith looks back. And I love this moment because for a moment, it really genuinely does look like she's regretting leaving Buffy and the others behind, but really she's just looking at the knife. And I don't know if you guys have anything to say to that. I just wanted to make sure I pointed that out because I always think that's such an interesting framing.
I chose it as my favorite scene because I didn't actually see it as being a knife thing. I thought it was I'm really doing this thing. Not just, like, I want to be with everyone. It's like, I can't believe I am helping the world end.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So there's my favorite scene already, but I think it's
a perfect time to speak
about. No, it's fine because it's, I think you could see it as both. Because she likes toys, but she likes living on Earth. Kind of like Spike, you know? He's like, I'm evil up to a certain point. I think that's Faith. I don't think she's May or evil.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, I always see that as her being sad of losing this extension of the affection that the mayor has for her, that this fatherly relationship. This is probably one of the first gifts she's ever received out of affection for her. And so I see her I've always read that moment as her just being really heartbroken to lose that thing because it was probably one of the first times she ever got something like that.
Well, to me, it wasn't like she couldn't just reach over and grab it again. Like, no one was stopping her from the fact that, like, sure, like, some spiders have gotten killed, but she just saved Wesley's life with it. So you would think that Wesley would be like, all right, then, take it. But it's not, I mean, I don't know why it was in anyone else's authority at that point to say that she couldn't have taken it, because the trade had happened. Sure, she's on the evil side, but I don't know.
But if she went back, like, they could grab her. They could, you know, like, it was kind of like she would have to move back into enemy territory. But no,
they were already so squishy. I mean, why would they grab her if he can just release the spiders again? She has the ultimate trump card because she's on the mayor's side. So, mm-hmm. I mean, to me, that's why it doesn't read as I lost my knife. It read more like symbolically to me, to mean more of I'm losing love for the mayor because this is the object he gave me. So I don't have it in my heart to love him anymore because I'm letting that go. And this is where I see her coming back. I don't see her actually caring about the object and saying, oh, darn, that was my favorite present. Now I have to lose it just because it's on enemy grounds. I see her saying, like, oh, shit, like, this guy's crazy. I'm letting him go. Like, he can't be my sugar daddy anymore.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, it's perfect. I definitely see it the same way as Caitlin does. But I don't, you know, I think your interpretation is perfectly fair as well. So that's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. All the while that this is going on, too, we have Principal Snyder going on this drug vendetta, which I think this is random but hilarious. I was going to ask, did anyone think he was going to die this week? Because I know I did when I watched it the first time.
I've always had the inclination that the principals aren't going to last too long on the show, from the fact that when we went over from Flutie to Snyder, I remember everyone going, oh, darn, and Flutie was our favorite. And I was like, our favorite? That must mean there are more.
It just means against Snyder, yeah.
And that's okay, because, like, he died with the hyena thing, and that was pretty early on. Don't know if that was season one, but regardless, it started to feel like, we're getting towards season four now, so maybe it's Snyder's time to go. He's a bit of a jerk. We acknowledge that in the upcoming episodes a whole bunch. So it's, if no one likes him, what's he doing? What's he
Snyder. Progressing? I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. Snyder's the best.
Yeah.
I've always been confused by Snyder in this episode because we saw multiple hints previously that he is aware that there is some kind of supernatural community and that, like, it goes all the way up to the mayor, like, with those him talking to, like, the detective and stuff, and then has no idea what's going on here, which always seemed to me like if he had the awareness that's implied that he did, he would not be nearly so surprised and freaked out in this episode.
Yeah, but he's clearly just a henchman, though, isn't he? Like, he's in the mayor's pocket, but he's not actually in the inner circle.
Yeah, I felt like he might have never seen the mayor, just, like, toyed with that threat. Like, I'm in with the mayor, but never actually stood in front of the mayor
before. Yeah, like, he doesn't receive his orders directly from, like, the mayor. Sort of the way he's been talking about him has been, like, this god figure. Like, oh, he came straight from the mayor. Like, oh, I feel so special. You know, the mayor sent me a message. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of Veep because that was my plane show for this trip. And he now, like, just reminds me of the character. I don't know if anyone watches Veep, but maybe a listener does. He reminds me of the character Jonah, who's, like, the vice president's, like, correspondent with the White House. So he just delivers messages all day. And he's like, this is coming straight from POTUS. But he's, like, never actually talked to the president before. And so it's just, like, he just walks in and he's like, message from POTUS. And they're all like, shut up, Jonah. No one cares. And I feel like that's how he is. He's just like, well, I could take this up the ladder to the mayor and his word will be final. And they're like, shut up, Snyder. You actually don't know the mayor.
Mm-hmm. That's a good comparison. I don't watch Veep because I don't like sharing my name, but I have watched a few episodes.
Oh, yeah, her name is
Lynn. You know what you're talking about. Yeah, very annoying. So it's sort of the final scene of the episode, which is moving into my favorite scene, because, like, almost everyone has given theirs already. So was the final scene of the episode, which is Buffy and Willow's it's Willow telling Buffy that she's decided to stay with her in Sunnydale, and Willow giving that whole speech about how, you know, everyone is learning how to, like, what are they going to do with the rest of their lives. She has all these choices. She can go anywhere she wants, but she's actually figured out that what she wants is to fight the good fight with Buffy. And I think this is such a great moment, not only for the two of them, not only for their friendship, not only for the Bechdel test, but also for Willow's character and for the whole idea of justifying why these characters are going to stay in Sunnydale post high school. Because literally, like, Willow is the one who would be most likely to leave, except it's totally in her character to stay. Like, for these reasons that she gives, not only because she actually wants to save the world, but also because she wants to stay with Buffy. She's figured out a purpose. Like, how many of us could say that at age 18, that we knew how to make the world a better place and how to felt like we mattered? Like, I still don't know that. So to me, this just resonated so much, and it totally justified why Willow is forgoing all of these great opportunities she has, because at the end of the day, she already knows what the purpose of her life is.
I agree. I think they do a good job of making sense of why she would stay, and it's a really good reason for her to stay. Like, this is best where I can put my skills to use, and what I want out of life is to help. And I could maybe help people if I went to Oxford and became a doctor or whatever, but I could save the planet, like, at the Hellmouth. So I want to help, and I can. And I think that's really amazing. She not only wants to make a difference, she has a place that she is able to do that, and she knows she can. So it actually works.
She can bring the magic too, which is a skill that Buffy doesn't have. And Giles has some, but definitely not. You know, we're told he doesn't have, like, a natural gift for it. She can actually bring something unique to this team, and that's why she stays. It's perfect. It's amazing. Also, just in terms of, again, at this point in the show, I think it's safe to say, you know, to not be too spoiler, to say that Buffy and Willow's friendship is one of my absolute favorite things about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I just love the whole thing about how girls in the show are allowed to be awesome on their own, but they're also allowed to be awesome together. You know, they're allowed to have awesome, genuine friendships that have nothing to do with this whole romance rivalry that's always going on in shows like this. And I think, I mean, of course there's romance going on, but there's also so much other stuff going on in these people's lives. And we're seeing them just bond over all of these different things and having these genuine shared moments of affection that don't have to be these tropey moments. And it just brings, like, a smile to my face. Like, I don't even know what to say. Like, I just love it so much. I don't know if the newbies have anything to add. Otherwise, I think we have one more favorite scene that hasn't been talked about yet, which is Brittany's.
Willow giving Giles the pages from the Ascension book because he was just so happy.
Yes. And well done, Willow. It's a nice little reveal.
It was really smooth.
This is such a good episode for Willow, too. Like, she's had that, you know, I remember back in season two, we were talking about how there were so few Willow-centric episodes and there was a lot of setting up Xander. This season, it's almost been the opposite. Like, Willow has just had so much stuff about Willow this season. It's probably one of the reasons why it's one of my favorite seasons. Favorite lines now. Let's start with Brittany again, because we were just talking about Willow, so.
Oh, yeah, sure. So after Willow says that she got into Oxford, Buffy says, "That's where they make the Gileses." And Willow goes, "I know, I can learn and have scones." And I was like, that's scones. Adorable. And scones are a thing in the next episode.
Yes. And on this podcast. So, Mitch, what was your favorite line?
Mine is when Xander goes, "Well, how can you tell which is which?" And in accordance to Willow's stick figures, he goes, "I mean, they both look kind of stick figury to me." And then Oz just goes, "Well, this one's me. See the little guitar?"
I like it.
I wish we could see that picture. I wish we could see Willow's drawing skills.
I like it. I just enjoy all the scenes with Xander and Oz this season, too. post-cheating.
I have still so much trouble swallowing these two characters getting along, because I really feel like if Cordelia is just barely able to even save Willow's life, quote-unquote, when Vamp Willow is tricking her to let her out of the cage, I don't know if that's saving her life, but whatever. And then she has to have this big conversation with her and all that to make it happen. But then these two seem like they kind of just get along again, and it feels like Oz is a little bit too forgiving toward both Willow and Xander here.
Well, Oz is not Cordelia. You know, I think it makes sense that they react in totally different ways. I think you're right. I mean, it takes someone special to be as forgiving as Oz is, but I totally buy that he is. I wouldn't have bought it if Cordelia was.
I feel like we're going to learn soon enough that Oz is a mind reader or something, and that's why he wasn't giving Buffy as many of the thoughts that he was really thinking. Like, he was just thinking... Oh, wait, no, he wasn't saying a lot. He was thinking a lot, so that doesn't add up. But he seemed to just, like, blindly trust these people. He comes into this whole Scooby gang and everything, and I think I'm missing something with his personality as to why he's trusting them, why he's retrusting Willow and Xander. None of it really follows through with me. Maybe it's because they're looking after him when he's a werewolf. I mean, looking back on Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, you can look back and say that, like the troll moment, like you can make best friends with people over traumatic events and extreme heightened emotions and all that kind of stuff. Maybe that's where it's coming from. Because I guess that Willow still does take care of Werewolf Oz, and that's pretty important.
Yeah, I think so. I think when you save the world together, I think you get a certain bond, you know? So my favorite line, and then we'll finish with Caitlin's, is when Faith, it's in the mayor's office, is that big confrontation between Faith and Willow. Faith goes, "Give me the speech again, please. Faith, we're still your friends. We can help you. It's not too late." And Willow goes, "It's way too late. It didn't have to be this way, but you made your choice. I know you had a tough life. I know that some people think you had a lot of bad breaks. Well, boo-hoo, poor you. You know, you had a lot more in your life than some people. I mean, you had friends like Buffy. Now you have no one. You were a slayer, and now you're nothing. You're just a big, selfish, worthless waste." It's Willow's moment after a season of being sidelined by Faith and watching her, quote-unquote, steal her people. This is what it comes down to, and Willow is the one who gives up on Faith. The Willow, the person who would usually be the most forgiving, is the one who gives up on Faith first, and I think that's brilliant. And I have to say my backup line, which was in the beginning of the episode when the vampire goes, "You killed him," and Faith goes, "What are you, the narrator?" And I just love that. I love it so much. Caitlin, round us off with yours.
Shocking nobody, I have a Buffy and Angel interaction. So when they're patrolling together at the beginning, and Buffy's like, "Do you think we're in a rut?" And he's like, "What?" And Buffy is, "You never take me any place new." And Angel goes, "What about that fire demon nest in the cave by the beach?" And then just kind of thought that was a nice change of pace. I love them.
I laughed at that too. That was a good one. So moving on now to episode 20, The Prom, which is the final episode before the two-part finale. So in this episode, Buffy wants a drawer. Yikes, she is getting clingy. Just kidding, she's fine, except Angel is being rational and realizes it is for the best. It is best for her to date someone alive, and best for him not to date someone who forgets that with morning comes sunlight. Meanwhile, it is prom time, and there are demons afoot, but never fear, Buffy is here, and her friends can all go dance while she saves the day. Even evil Anya and shop girl Cordy, because Xander is learning how to be not so terrible anymore, and maybe there's hope for him after all. In the end, everyone gives Buffy an award because they are watching after all, and Angel shows up to prom even though he doesn't want to. Okay, so the prom. I actually want to talk to begin this discussion a little bit about the dream sequence that happened in the beginning of this episode with Buffy in a wedding dress. So I want to ask the newbies if you knew it was a dream or maybe it doesn't happen at the beginning. It happens at some point. Did you like the visuals? Did you like this little fantasy sequence? Fan service given?
Well, I was tweeting out that I wanted to make that little notebook cover Buffy and Angel forever. I wanted to make that my AOL Instant Messenger profile picture or Avatar, as they were probably called in those days. I take that back. I want to make, like, the silhouette of them, you know, like, foreheads together, like, smiling with the priest behind them. I want to make that my avatar, because
yeah, you wouldn't be the first.
I would not be the first, and that's where I'd appreciate it. I would have been such a big Bangel shipper back in the day. I would have had such a good time with this scene. I would have made many a music video on YouTube, probably cut to songs Cut Me to Pieces or Linkin Park songs, like something really traumatic, you know, because they can't be together. I would have, this would have been such good, like, I'm sure as soon as this episode aired, if I was watching it originally, I would have been like, finally, fuel for my ship. I can go so far with this one.
I once saw a Buffy and Angel music video to Angels Will Fall. You know that one? Angels will fall. It was great. It was great.
Yeah. Like, with the lips of an angel.
Oh, that one. That one. That yep. Shit, guys. Yeah. I'm sure that
all
exists.
Over that shit.
Mm-hmm. I'm so sad you weren't in the fandom back then. I would have loved to see that. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right.
If I can't go back and make the lips of an angel music video nowadays, I'm sure I wouldn't be the first to think of that either.
No, you would not. Did you like this dream sequence, Caitlin?
I just find it a little cheesy. Like, I know, I can't help it. It's just sort of, it's a little over the top with the, we can't be together, so I'm going to dream of you in a wedding dress and we're getting married. It's a little on the nose for me.
It always felt very fan servicey to me. You know, like they want it because they know that this is the big breakup episode. They want to give the fans a little something like it could have been, even though it couldn't have been. But
that's why I love it. I think that we need more fan service in shows, please.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do love the visual of it being her that catches fire rather than him, because it is sort of like he's obviously like very on the nose, like you said, Caitlin. But he is obviously imagining, you know, he's taking her future away by being with her. He's condemning her to basically living death by being, you know, by her being with him. And you know he would think that because he is that dramatic.
Why can't they just make Buffy a vampire, give her back her soul, call it a day?
They can't just do that. That's not how it works.
I wonder if there's a way to get pregnant with either both or one partner being a vampire, to where if that would be a big decision factor for Buffy, if she was to consider it, saying like,
you're thinking Breaking Dawn again.
No, I'm not even Breaking Dawn. I'm to the point of, I mean, kind of, because I know she's still like a lot of vampire concepts from this we're saying, but I'm thinking in terms of the world of Buffy, if Buffy was to sit there ever, I wonder if I'm in Buffy's headspace, if I'm considering, okay, he wants to protect me from vampires and the like, what if I just become a vampire and we can live immortally? Then would she consider, oh, well, I'm giving up perhaps having children? I'm not sure. Because I feel like you would be. I really do. I don't know too many creatures that can survive off of a host when it's not really alive. I don't know if the hearts are really beating in vampires in this show. It's never really been clear to me.
They're not. It's very clear.
Is it so they're not? I mean, Vampire Diaries, they very much are, but this one, they're very much not.
Defines
that in their anatomy that their hearts aren't beating. Does she like listen to Angel's chest or something?
They say it all the time. But I know, I do understand there's a lot of vampire mythologies nowadays going on
that you sort of have to get
mixed up with it. I understand.
I can't keep track of it. Like, yeah. So that's where I'm really feeling like if they haven't explored it yet, they might eventually, where they're going to say, let's make X main character into a vampire. And that could be where the trope comes into play in the Vampire Diaries and in Twilight, etc., from the fact that Buffy did it first. And I don't know that for sure. I swear I'm a newbie, guys. Right? You know, hair toss, whatever. But if it's true, then that'd be really, really cool.
Well, but I will just say, that's the thing with Buffy, unlike maybe other vampire mythologies where, I mean, to be honest, one of the things that always really disappointed me with both the Vampire Diaries and Twilight after seeing Buffy was how little it mattered when people actually became vampires. Like the narrative always makes such a big deal out of it. But in reality, you're exactly the same, just dead. Like, but you're not really dead. because you're still walking around doing all the same things you were before. So when they say dead, they don't actually mean dead. But I think in Buffy, what makes it feel so real to me is, first of all, there's the whole lack of soul. Like, when you become a vampire, it's not actually... Like, if Buffy became a vampire, it wouldn't be Buffy the vampire. It would be a demon from the underworld in Buffy's body with Buffy's memories.
She'd still be the Slayer.
No. She wouldn't be Buffy. Like, I don't know if she was the vampire Slayer.
I'm in a weird place because of the nightmare verse where...
Yeah, but that was... don't think about that. That was, like, a nightmare, literally, that didn't, like, represent... The reality.
I don't know, because Buffy does go like, oh, we better hurry up and go get the boogeyman because I'm getting hungry, guys. Wink.
Yeah.
Because I'm a vampire now. And I'm like, so you're very self-aware of this fact, but you're not evil. So I guess that...
Right. But that's why I tell you to not think about it, because I understand where the confusion... But that was like, it was her nightmare becoming a vampire. So she was living her nightmare, but she was still Buffy. When someone becomes a vampire on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, they are not... They are not themselves. Their bodies are inhabited. Well, their dead bodies are inhabited by creatures that have their memories.
That's interesting, though, because there are very few characters that we haven't seen, main characters that we haven't seen as vampires. In terms of just this trio, I guess we could say that much. We've seen those three: Willow, Xander, and Buffy.
Yeah.
I wish we saw Buffy's personality as a vampire. That would
I know.
Been
I know. That would have been
interesting. Still waiting out for Cordelia and Giles and maybe Wishverse. Who the hell knows? Mm-hmm. Like, that thing can come back again. It's interesting. It's really fun to see how they transform and what they do once they're a vampire.
It is. Because with Willow and Xander, like, we saw what would a demon inhabiting their body do with their inner inhibitions being gone? You know, how would they use... their memories and their emotions to do what they wanted to do without remorse. So again, the whole idea of turning someone into a vampire, like, we already had this thing play out with Ford in season 2, Lie to Me, where he was like, he wanted to be a vampire because he was like, well, I'll just be dead, but I will still be alive. And Buffy gave him the whole speech. She's like, you will not be Ford. You will be dead. There will be a demon in your body. And we had this whole thing. I know it's a long time ago. But yeah, that's basically what it is. So moving on a little bit. So Buffy obviously wants to commit to Angel. We already touched on the whole Buffy Angel forever, which, you know, I don't know about you guys. I totally wrote stuff like that on my school books. But Angel, you know, sort of realizes at the same time that it's going to have to end. And this is happening, obviously, 3 episodes before the finale of the... Or 2 episodes before the season finale. After a whole season of them sort of not really knowing where they stand with each other. You know, ever since Angel came back from the dead... They've been together in theory, but it's been leading to this all season, I think. And I don't know how you guys feel about it happening now under the circumstances it's happening under. What do you think, Brittany?
You're talking about their breakup, right?
Yeah, like, okay, them coming to the realization.
Well, I think we had this discussion a few weeks ago. I'm not sure if you were on it, where, like, all of a sudden they're just back together again. Like, are we supposed to assume it just, like, happened where they got back together? It wasn't like a big grand, like, gesture or anything. Like, there wasn't anyone crying or being like, I missed you so much. It was just like, oh yeah, they're back together now. That's cute. Mm-hmm. But so, like, this having all of these things kind of leading up to it and just different levels of intensity adding on to everything, like with Buffy being like, hey, we're gonna go to prom together, right? I'm not asking you, but I'm sort of assuming that you're coming with me. And hey, wouldn't it be nice if I have a drawer at your place? And Angel sort of, like, slowly, like, you know, retreating into himself, being like, yeah, no, I don't want to say no, but also no, never in a million years will that happen, because I think we should break up. And I have a lot to deal with right now, and we're going to eventually break up. I felt like it was too many things piling on to the ultimate end of this episode, which was them, you know, deciding that they shouldn't be together. So it felt very, very heavy-handed, and I didn't like that very much, especially because I appreciated the fact that they didn't make a huge deal out of their reunion. I'm like, oh, good, they're just back together. We don't have to have an episode about it. But this felt very, like, heavy-handed. Like, don't forget that there are, like, a lot of things that Buffy's just not going to address, and she's going to be really upset when he decides to, like, you know, officially pull back. And I thought it was sort of a weakness on Buffy's part, because I felt that she was already halfway there in the last episode, and she just sort of ignored it in this episode.
I think for Buffy at this moment, she's kind of caught up in the romance of the idea of the prom, and she's kind of made her decision of what she's going to do after high school, assuming they all survive graduation, and like, and her best friend is going to be with her. So it's like, I feel like there's a sense of everything has fallen into place in a good way, and it's really easy just to be happy in that moment. So, and she so seldom gets that feeling of contentment and happiness that everything is where it needs to be. So maybe it is a bit naive, but I think there's just that sense of everything is right and I can make things continue to be right. And I kind of think that's where she is in that moment. And then Angel is obviously having this completely separate reaction to everything that's been going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, that's actually one thing. It's interesting, Brittany, you brought it up about them not being, like, not officially getting back together. I guess what happened, it happened in, like, the Zeppo, you know, kind of half off screen. But what I do love about this and about his decision to leave and how it plays into to the season overall is that, I mean, they spent such a long time this season pretending to just be friends. You know, when they were rescuing Xander and Willow earlier this year, they were basically trying to convince Spike that they were just friends, and he was calling BS on it. He was saying, look, you guys will never be friends, you know, you'll fight and you'll whatever. And and I think what's happening here is that Angel is finally realizing, you know, things are starting to get serious with Buffy. They're starting to acknowledge that no, we're together. And he's beginning to realize that no matter what happens, Spike is right, you know, and the mayor is right, and all these people are right, that they're always going to fall together. They're never going to be able to be in the same place and not be together and not be tangled up in this emotional whirlwind of intense passion that they have. And I think that's what it really makes a lot of sense to me, that this is the moment when he's choosing to go and why he's choosing to go and how that all comes about. In terms of writing him off the show, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I also think it makes a lot of sense for it to happen here, because it's very ironic to me that, you know, in this episode, Buffy's talking so much about having this perfect high school moment before it's over. And I think this is kind of it. You know, I think this is her perfect high school moment. It's the cliche of breaking up with your high school boyfriend right before the end of school, because they're growing up and they're growing apart and they're leaving town, and there's a sense of a new chapter of your life starting, and all these endings are happening, and it's something that, unfortunately, you know, you see a lot happening in high school. People break up on the last day of school and the last week of school, and the fact that this happens to Buffy under these supernatural circumstances, but when you really break it down, her boyfriend is leaving town to go, you know, off on his to start his own life somewhere else. And I really enjoy the symmetry of that for just the story value of it. Not that I'm happy he's going, Caitlin. Don't worry. but I do like what it represents, you know. I don't know if that makes any sense.
I mean, he does get his whole entire show to himself, and I know that that's going to mean that at this point he's going to see Buffy again. It's not like they're gone from each other's lives forever. I know that he'll come back from the fact that I already figured it out by now. Like, he has to be good in the Angel spinoff, so it's not in Jealous, Brittany. Sorry, I hate to break that to you, but I think we can all tell by now that
I don't think you're breaking anything.
Breaking news. He's going to be Angel in the show, Angel. Yeah, but it's funny that you skipped one of those two episodes, because I'm pretty sure he pretended to be Angelus one of the episodes you skipped most recently. So that's sad, because I think that's the last you're going to see that character. Unless we see... Oh, come on. No, we're going to see a bunch of flashbacks in Angel of Angelus. They're going to be like bottle episodes of just like... just David playing against, like, I don't know, random one-off episode characters. So I think that might be our saving grace here, Brittany. Because I'm starting to get with you. Like, as much as I ship Angel here, I'm really appreciating whenever I see Angelus, because he really is fun. He's just so ruthless, and no one else is as mean or as cutting as him. And it's not even like the master is even as evil as him. I find Angelus to be worse, which is fabulous, because he doesn't just go for the kill. No. He, like, tortures everyone in Buffy's friend group. And that was fun, because it felt like a real threat. It felt like really something could happen. And it did. Jenny died. I can only imagine.
It was fun, Mitch.
That was the funniest thing.
I was just slapping my knee laughing.
Yep.
I don't even know. Oh, come on. This is torture.
So I mean, one of the things I wanted to touch on too is that Joyce coming to see Angel and telling him, once again, we have someone else telling Angel and Buffy what to do. And I know for a lot of this part of the discussion, you guys are going to be going, Joyce is the worst. So I'll just start by saying that I do actually have some mixed feelings on this. I think that it's clearly very intrusive and very controlling in a way, but I do think, coming from the perspective of Joyce and what she's trying to do here, it is sort of a good mom move. I think it's a good protective mom move. And I will also say, you know, if you'd imagine something like this coming from maybe Giles, I don't think people necessarily would have been as angry. So that might be something to consider too. I don't know what you have to say about this.
No, I think that's a really good point. If it was to come from Giles, I would definitely be like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But I think it's because Giles knows Angel and Joyce really doesn't. She knows Angel as the guy who broke her daughter's heart, the guy who went completely insane and evil, and she doesn't really know that when or if that could happen again. And he's not as funny as Spike. So she feels this kinship with Spike, which is great. And then she has this guy walking in who's, like, tall, dark, and brooding, and handsome. And she's like, oh, you're a heartbreaker. I don't know about that. That other guy's got bleached hair. Buffy would never go for that. Like, he's safe. It's fine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I definitely agree that if this speech were taken verbatim and given to Giles, we'd be like, oh, he's so right. Buffy, you need to listen to him. But because it's with Joyce... it's sort of like, yeah, it makes sense. You are doing your motherly duty, and it is fair for you to say these things. But also, I would feel better if you had a bigger picture to work with, like, you know, to back up what you're saying. But she's a mom, you know.
She is a mom. Yeah. She wants to help Buffy. I think maybe for me the big picture comes in all the stuff that is sort of inferred. With Joyce and what she's made privy to in Buffy's life. And I think, you know, Buffy does share a lot more with Giles than she does with Joyce. And I think from Joyce's perspective, she's doing the best she can with the information that she's been given. And I've always sort of felt a lot of sympathy for Joyce in this situation, because I think it's so easy for me too to watch a show like this and to just say, oh, the parents need to go away because the kids are busy saving the world. But when you sort of look at the way they've painted Joyce, I think I always understand where she's coming from, at least. That doesn't mean I'm necessarily 100% liked what she did here. I think she should have spoken to Buffy rather than Angel. But I understand her intentions, at least. And I don't think they're bad intentions.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I don't think they are. I think she's coming with good intentions. But good intentions, you know what they say about good intentions. The road to hell is, the road with hell is paved with them. So I think, like, I'm not one of the people on this podcast who hates Joyce. I think she is doing the best she can. So,
yeah, I agree.
I understand where she's coming from, and I really would have been bothered if this speech had also come from Giles. And this has really never bothered me until this rewatch, and it's probably just because I'm a little bit older watching it now that it bothers me, but I very much am. I just get kind of cringy with people basically saying, we know more about what Buffy needs, and we know more about your relationship than you do.
Yeah.
And I just, it takes away Buffy's agency in the whole relationship, and that does bother me. And it's never really before, but it does now, and I don't like that anybody, whether it's the mayor or Giles or Joyce or whoever, I don't like them assuming things about this couple. I think they, again, logically, what they say makes sense, but logic doesn't always follow. And like, Buffy and Angel is very much like the fairy tale couple. Like, they are meant to be that, you know, first sight love sort of thing that Angel had. And so they're very much a fairy tale. And logic doesn't apply in fairy tale romances. So.
Right. I see what you're saying. I think I'm to that point now where I'm just thinking, like, she's so young. She's Buffy. It's her first love. She doesn't know. Like, she needs, I don't know. I always feel like Buffy's thrust into these things too soon. Like, I'm thinking, what if I had a daughter that was in a relationship like this?
But on the same time, like, if I had a daughter, I would feel the same as Joyce, I'm sure.
Right.
But at the same time, just as a woman, I feel like Buffy should be allowed to make her own mistakes. And if it is really horrible, it's still her own mistake. And I don't like that they're trying to keep her from making her own decisions.
Mm-hmm. I understand that. The scene that sort of comes after the break, we didn't really talk about the breakup scene itself. I don't know if that's anyone's favorite scene. It is. With a smiley face. That's funny.
Guess who's picked it.
I don't think Brittany and I will ever ship the same thing on the show.
I don't think so.
Well, I guess sort of, since we'll be talking about that a little bit later, let's talk a little bit about the scene that has Willow comforts Buffy in Buffy's bedroom. And Buffy is devastated because it is, you know, I think it's sort of like it's the fairy tale is ending. The fantasy is over. They're not even just breaking up. He's leaving her. And I think, you know, the fact that Buffy is still understanding, it does show some maturity on Buffy's part, you know, emotional maturity. And I just love the scene because I think her heartbreak feels so real. I really love how much it breaks her. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I think it's one of the best. Also, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar's acting here is just phenomenal.
I think
I'm very moved by it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those really real moments, like, that the show is really good at portraying, where, like, she made all the right decisions. She made the decision to stay in Sunnydale. She made the decision to go to college. She made the decision to do all the stuff that checked off the boxes that would please everyone. It would please Giles. It'll please her mother. It'll please her friends, because her friends can also stay, and they're not affected by her decision, like, you know, to stick around and figure things out. And it helps, you know, save the world. And so the world gets a big check. And so the one check that she was also able to give herself was that she was staying in a place where Angel would be. But now that check is the only check that she made that would help her at her core is being taken away. So it makes sense that she's upset and devastated, because it's a much bigger issue than just losing your first love. It's like, oh, that was the decision I made for myself, and I figured out a way to make it work, pleasing everyone so that I could be happy. And I can't even have that.
It's tough because of a Angel Shipper. So seeing Buffy in such distraught state really makes me sad. I don't want to see Buffy cry over Angel. I want to see them cuddle and be cute, and for her to not be an idiot, open up the shades on him, because that was just stupid. No, like, dumb. Hello. And it's weird too, because for to a certain extent, it felt like they were playing off like Buffy and Angel aren't right for each other because he leads too dangerous of a life for her. But it's almost like in a certain way, the opposite is true as well, that Buffy's too dangerous for him because she's so dumb with that light thing, but also it's because she attracts danger. She attracts other vampires. and it seems to be fairly easy to kill a vampire in comparison to, I don't know, I guess it's easy to kill humans as well, but you don't even get a body when they're gone. It's just so sad, and I think that he's trying to preserve his everlasting life. He seems to like living. He's like, once again, like Spike, he likes being immortal because he likes doing things on Earth, and I don't
think
he wants to die.
He was literally ready to die 5 episodes ago because he couldn't be with Buffy.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like he's there anymore to me. I feel like he still sees that there's a purpose in life because he gave Buffy a purpose in a certain way. He, I don't know if that came out right. He didn't break her heart for bad reason. He did it to protect her, and now he wants to kind of protect her from afar, is my impression. I think he's going to continue to fight the demons that are bad in the world, but he's going to do it for Buffy. So I think he's still good. I think he's still enjoying the world that he inhabits because Buffy's on it. And that's so melodramatic. God, they're so gag-worthy and sugary sweet, and I love it, and I shouldn't, but I don't even care. Like I said, I just want them to cuddle, and I want them to be back to that good, happy place. That would be fun for me. I'm not going to get that, apparently. So goodbye and hello, spinoff show.
Okay. I'm not really sure where to go from there.
Did you guys know of the spinoff show at this point when you're watching Buffy live? You must have.
I didn't watch it live. I started in season 4. So okay. I knew.
Caitlin, were you watching live?
I was in and out watching live, so I don't think I would have known about it.
Did you interpret this breakup differently? Like, did you think, oh, he'll still be on the show or something? Like, did you even know he was departing?
I honestly don't remember watching this part of it live. So yeah.
That's the thing. Like, it's sort of when I watched it, like, it ran on 2 different channels, and one channel was only once a week every Sunday, and it was all caught up, and the other channel was like 3 episodes every afternoon, but it was like season 2. And then it, like, caught up and started over again and, like, caught some every once in a while. It was the weirdest viewing experience ever. But that's what TV was like back then. It's not like now. Yeah. We have to watch it all in order.
I was also 10 when this aired.
Yeah, me too.
So I was not exactly doing television at age 10.
Yeah, that makes sense. My mom and dad would never have let me watch Buffy growing up. Like, I remember at one point I wanted to watch it because I think it was, I mean, catch me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like it was close to when Sabrina the Teenage Witch was on. I don't know if I'm making that up, but I think I remember watching that show and then Buffy or some other, like, scary supernatural show came on after Sabrina. My parents were like, go in the other room. You can't watch the show. It's too scary for you. And I remember, like, trying to peek and, like, looking over and seeing, like, demons in a cave and fire and all this kind of crazy stuff. And I was like, oh, what a mature show. And now I can look at Buffy and be like, please, I've seen, you know, whatever shows now. This is nothing. But it's funny from how I've grown up, how my perspective of Buffy has always changed. I used to think it was just like a strange, campy show. And it's not that it's not campy anymore, guys, because it still is. But I appreciate it a lot more. Growing up now, I think I'm into it more than I ever would have been as a kid or even in a tween year. Like, now growing up, I can realize the production going on behind it. And I appreciate that Angel's leaving for his own show in a different way. I think this is the opportune time for me personally to come back and enjoy Buffy and to see this breakup be as instrumental as it is in creating an even larger Buffyverse. And also, it's nice to know that the Angel spinoff isn't going to fail. It's nice to know that it's going to have, isn't it 7 seasons as well, or 6? Like, that's a big deal. And that means that it went on for, isn't it that it went on for a year or 2 years after Buffy ended? I'm not sure.
I don't remember.
Was it 2?
One.
1 year. Okay. So, and that's going to be really interesting. So I'm really excited for it. And I think that this is a good thing that's happening. Even though it breaks up a ship, because I don't know, like, maybe Fuffy can happen now or something. Like, you know, one door closes, another opens. So it's all fine. Or coffee even. Oh, sure. Coffee. That'd be great.
Coffee?
I have no idea.
I forgot about that. I'm sorry. Yes.
We just need to knock off Wesley first, and I'm okay with that.
Okay.
He's had enough time to meet the actor's had enough time to meet Allison Hannigan. He could die any day now, and I'd be okay with that.
Okay. Well, in this, going back to the scene a little bit with Buffy being upset and crying and Willow being in best friend mode, and I again a great win for Willow in this episode. I think I loved how rational she was being and how she was so willing to stand by Buffy, but she did have to admit that, you know, he's right. That he gotta go. I don't know if you guys have anything to say about that. still feeling the Willow love.
She's so great in this scene. She's just doing what the best friend needs to do. Like, whatever Buffy needs, she's going to be that if it means, you know, making Angel evil in for breaking up with her. That's what she's going to do. And if that means just letting Buffy cry in her lap, that's what she's going to do. Like, she's quality best friend. A plus Willow.
A plus best friending. Yeah, for sure. I love Willow's character development, too. It's just it's really coming out here how far she's come. And I think that's so great. So another point in the doc is that Anya's back and she takes Sanders to prom. Surprise! How are we feeling about Anya's return? Did you guys think she was going to come back for this?
I'm starting to see her as like an Amy replacement, which is sad because I liked Amy. And then that makes me feel like Amy might not come back from rat form. And then we're just going to have to, I don't know, give her a block of cheese and say good girl. And I don't know, maybe that actress's contract was up and they just decided to hire a new one at that point. And that was that. They were like, generic witch role needed to fill on Buffy. Who wants to come in and cast for that? And they were like, cool, let's make a new character. We got sick of using the other. So that's where I'm at right there. So I like Anya. I do. Like
totally wrong.
Sorry. I like so Anya. I really do. But I'm like, random.
I do. I've liked Anya from the first little bit she came in. Mm-hmm. And I like that she's like this scene where she's in the beginning. Once again, I think it's my favorite quote, but she's nice that she's well developed in that she's kind of like reverting now that she's not magical to being like a real 18-year-old girl, and I like that about her. I find it to be really fun, and I remember what Natalie was saying about this being like a Narnia situation where she's lived all these years, but now she has to act as a teenager again because that's a big torturous thing, and I think that that's a really interesting character to have. It's not like, I mean, it's different than like Angel because he doesn't really try to pretend he's a teenager. He just broods in the corner, but Anya is a totally different vibe here. And I can't really think of too many characters that really stuck through with trying to be a teenager after they're really old. Like Darla pretty much just pretended, but she didn't actually follow through with it. And this is why I find her to be as an interesting character as she is now, because she has somewhere to go. She has power to regain. That's really fun.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, if she's doing anything else, she at this point, like, she's taking Sander to prom, which I think is really funny. I really enjoy that. And I enjoy too what it did for Sander and Cordelia too. Because obviously there's a huge storyline going on here with Cordy, and we learn why she's been working in a shop. We learn all of that stuff and sort of ultimately Anya and Xander versus Cordy. I'm jumping ahead now, but that moment at the prom with the two of them squaring off, I really enjoyed that. But let's talk a little bit about Cordelia. Let's talk about the fact that her family's broke, which means that she can't go to any of those fancy colleges that she got into. Ariana has a point in the doc saying that it is so unfair, but it is also incredibly realistic because unfortunately this happens a lot in real life. So what did you guys think about this?
Happened to me.
Did it really?
I didn't get to go to the college of my choice because I could not afford it.
Yeah, well, this happened to me. I got into Brown and I couldn't go. And I had to go to like some uni in the UK instead. So I understand. I understand her plight. It's many years ago now.
I'm kind of regretting going to a college I couldn't afford. So there's that too.
But what did you guys think about this reveal for Cordelia?
I was kind of upset about it because I felt like, oh, of course Cordelia can't just have, I mean, she, this is a hard way to phrase this. I was like, I was going to say, of course Cordelia can't just have something that she wants. But then you look at Buffy and it's like, okay, Cordelia's situation actually isn't that bad. But I think it's just because I like Cordelia a lot and I felt really, really bad for her because she... We see her putting on this, like, brave face all the time and actually figuring out that, like, no, she dumped those friends who are horrible human beings. She, you know, she has this great personality buried very, very deep underneath. And she does work hard and she does deserve to go to a good school. But now she's kind of just screwed and she's trying to make everything seem status quo and having something going on at home and trying to prove to all your friends that, yeah, everything's fine and I am totally cool with everything that's happening in my life is a hard thing for a kid to deal with. And I think it puts her back in that boat of like, oh, right, these are just kids and their parents' mistakes are messing them up as well. And, you know, these people do have to bring their real lives into what they're dealing with at school as well. So for her being part of this group and trying to, you know, not say anything that's going on is just another act that she has to, you know, bear. So it was kind of hard to see her like being pushed to like regress back into that role of like, oh, I'm in this group of friends and I'm trying to act as one thing, even though I don't want to be. And she was finally in the group where she didn't have to act and she now still feels like she has to. So I was really torn up about it.
I really like Cordelia, and her plight is sad to me because it starts to feel like she just can't win. And when she tries to be good and she tries to be just, she dates Xander because she likes him genuinely. She's not just like living life frugally anymore. And once she starts doing that, she loses it all. And maybe this is a good experience for her. It could be that her being now broke is something that allows her to be more humble when it comes to clothes and earning a really fancy dress or a car, or, you know, someone that has lesser than she is lesser than in the eyes of even, you know, like Buffy and Xander and Willow. So that's a big deal. That's a big shift for her to have to get used to. And also it's a really good excuse to get her to stay in Sunnydale again. So there you go for that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really, really good point. You know, and we're sort of left with the question of like, what's Cordelia going to do now? Like, is she going to, are we going to come back next season? She's going to continue to work in a shop? You know, what do you guys think?
She's going to run off with Angel and they're going to live happily ever after.
Because I know Ariana has a point in the doc as well, you know, speculating that she'll go off. And also she wants to ask the newbies if what their dream spinoff cast list is. So I thought we could talk a little bit about that.
Oh, I would love for Cordelia and Angel to, like, live out their days together. And then the creepy new watcher can go with her, too. So it'll be great.
I'm in tough territory here because anyone that goes onto Angel has to leave Buffy, I assume, for a good amount of time at the very least. I mean, what if we lose someone important? Like, what if Willow decides to go with Angel to whatever? I know we just established here, but that could have been a bait and switch where she's like, oh, no, I'm staying in Sunnydale to help you fight against evil. I don't know. Like,
it's just like, oh, wait, Angel, no, I choose you.
Yeah, like, wait, no, he's more important. Like, what if
Buffy in the end, they're going to have, like, those teams. Like, you have to, in gym, like, Buffy and Angel are team leaders, and they have to call names, you know, one after
another.
Hell,
this is like Captain America Civil War. This is,
yeah,
this is
pretty much
serious business. Like, we're probably going to lose a character that's not a main character. I don't think Willow's really going to go. But I feel like, I mean, Cordelia's right on the edge of where it might... I mean, she's still a main character, but she's become more and more auxiliary as the show's gone on, unfortunately. She was more important when she was dating Xander, which is also something that I have a little bit of trouble swallowing in terms of the show Buffy itself. And I'm looking for her to get a bigger purpose now. I'd be happy, I think, for Cordelia if she was to join Angel's crew of... I mean, he's going to have, like, a crew. It's not going to be just him. I wonder if they're going to be, like... See, that's the thing. Like, I don't know if he's going to hang out with vampires or humans, and I don't know what I'd be happiest with. I don't know if I wanted to, like, create vampires out of humans he likes to have them be fun and evil.
But you can't do that!
You can do anything you want in a supernatural universe.
Can't.
You can, because then he needs Willow so that Willow can be help, can be the help to recruit them, because Willow can give them back their souls. That's
no,
how this is going to
work.
She already did it once. It was pretty easy. She just had to buy a little magic ball and go blah blah blah, magic presto, there you
I
go, and it was back.
Goodbye.
I wonder about Mitch sometimes.
Listen, maybe I just read a little bit too much fan fiction in my heyday.
Maybe. Yeah, but it'll be interesting. We don't have to wait long to find out, luckily, so we can take up this discussion again then. So where are we now in the doc? What about that Cordy Wesley romance, though? Because that kind of heated up a little bit in this episode. How are you guys feeling about that? Are you still not Wesley fans?
No, I mean, he's already been put in his place so much by Giles, and like, especially last episode when they were trying to like make the plans and everyone was just ignoring him and talking over him. So I feel like his time is running out. So he's more of like just a, it's more of a countdown as opposed to annoyance, being like, okay, this guy's got to go soon. Well, I hope he does. Just even if he doesn't go, like I said, he would be fine if he went to like Angel or something, but his time with this group has to come to an end soon. So I'm just looking forward to that, only because like we saw in the last episode, they don't need him, and they, if they're just going to have him around to talk over him, it's kind of pointless. But in regards to Cordy and him, I don't like it. I think that Giles is completely right to be like, she's 18. That, yeah, it's legal, but it's not great. So I'm completely on board with them not being together.
I was talking to the listener, and I was having issues with this relationship because I couldn't come up with a good ship name for it, which means something, because that means it's not meant to be, which means he's a great candidate to go off to Angel. That's really all that comes down to. I mean, I'm fine with it. I don't care. Maybe it's because, Charisma Carpenter, right? She's like definitely not even 18 here. It feels like maybe she just looks older if she's not, but I mean, she looks like she's 25 to me, and he looks like he's 30.
She was older. She was definitely a little bit older.
So it's nothing weird to me that they would get together, because it just, there's such a disparity between, like, you know, when you see a character on TV playing a certain age, but they look older, but when, if they were actually to be cast at that certain age and be dating or dating people above them, it would look weird. Here, that doesn't really fit, because it just feels normal, because it's like, whatever, like, they look the same age already, so it's not an age thing for me. And I have trouble, like, because of the fact that Charisma looks so much older than her character is meant to be, it's hard for me to get into the headspace of this being strange, because a lot of it just feels like, when it comes to seeing a relationship looking weird, is by actual looks, by seeing a younger person dating an older person in real life. And since that element is missing for me here, I can't get into the fantasy that the characters are in, where they're seeing Cordelia being 18. I'm like, oh, that's creepy. So that's where I feel like I'm just missing it in terms of casting. Maybe they should have like cast a much older Wesley, and then I would have understood their concern a bit more. Like, maybe give him, I don't know if he has any gray hair, but maybe like some Giles gray hair. That's sexy. I can get into that. And then that would have made more sense to me.
I don't even think the age difference is that bad. Like, I never really thought about it. I don't necessarily, like, I don't know if I have an opinion about the ship, but I think that in terms of age, like, he's about like, what, 28 or something, and she's 18, so about 10 years. Yeah, maybe it is a little weird. I don't know. I think decide.
Maybe if she wasn't still going to like classes and stuff like that, you know what I mean? Like, if this was like post graduation and not like, okay, now I have to go to chemistry or something like that. Like, that's what bothers me. It's not so much an age. It is an age difference thing, but an age difference to the point where she's still in school. So I think that's what like weirds me out about it more.
Yeah, that's a good point. Caitlin, did we get your opinion on Cordy Wesley? Questly, do you ship it?
I do not. I find the age difference a little creepy.
Okay.
So, not my thing.
Right. That's fair. And but yeah, so let's move on to talk about Sander a little bit in this episode. He actually does a really great thing, which is he pays for Cordelia's prom dress. I really like this moment. I think it sort of brings these two characters a little bit of closure. You know, obviously, I mean, buying a dress does not make up for cheating on someone, but I do think in a lot of ways it helps them move on. It's what Cordelia needs to move on here, in this case, literally move on with Wesley. And the fact that Xander sort of very openly approves, not that she needs his approval in any way, but that he sort of very openly helps her to get the prom that she wants and get a date that she quote unquote deserves because he's in a tux and she likes him and all that. I think that it is a wonderful moment for these two characters, both for Sander and for Cordelia. So I really appreciated that.
One of the few times I actually like Sander.
I can't believe you're on the don't like Sander train. It's very sad to me. Was this an opinion you've always had or just this way we watched? I'm curious.
he's never been a favorite, but it's just recently that I've really come to find him a lot grosser than I used to. And I think it's a lot of, as I get older, my views on a lot of things change.
Mm-hmm. So this rewatch?
Yeah, and probably the last rewatch I did, which was more piecemeal. This is the first, like, full rewatch I've done in a really long time.
Mm-hmm. It's just, it's interesting. The older I get, the more I appreciate Sandra as a character, I think. I sort of come to see his value in the show in a lot of ways. I do think this episode, this moment is really great. So I mean, the whole plot of this episode, obviously, is that Buffy is trying to stop a guy with some hellhounds, which is Tucker Wells, who has these hellhounds and he wants to invade to prom. And they basically look exactly like the werewolves. And I love it. I love those practical effects. You know, it's like a whole Star Wars vibe to it. I think that's great. But Buffy saves everyone. She saves the prom and she arrives and she has a nice dress on. And there's this moment that is my favorite scene. And I'm just going to go straight into that, which is, Buffy, you know, they call out, they say, you know, we have one more award to get out. And Jonathan comes on stage, he's back, and he basically gives this speech that confirms that the students at Sunnydale High are not as ignorant of everything. Just like we had with the parents a couple of episodes ago, the students are not as ignorant as they like to pretend that they are. And they give her an umbrella, you know, they make her class protector because they recognize that that Buffy helped Sunnydale High have the lowest mortality rate in Sunnydale history, which is also just so fun because it's an acknowledgement of the fact that a lot of students die at the school every year. But this year it's been a little bit less, and it's been because of Buffy. And you know, they shout out the people, the animals that have attacked them, and one of them shouts Snyder. And
hyenas, hyenas, come on, guys.
Yeah,
hyena people.
Hyena that people.
Is that season one?
That was season one. Yeah. It was a walk down memory lane there. Yeah.
I feel like we can't forget that pig. That's the integral part of the show. That pig was. Yep. Was Buffy's transformation into a woman.
Mm-hmm. The pig is fine. Nothing happened to the pig.
Oh, God. Never be with a pig.
Live in your fantasy, Caitlin. Live in your fantasy.
So, I mean, this is my favorite scene of the episode. It's one of my favorite scenes of the show so far because I think it's such a nice payoff. You know, I think after 3 years of the show having sort of rested on this idea that the students are basically living through all these horrible things and accepting that these horrible things are happening all around them. And it's like Fight Club all the time that they just don't talk about it. There is this moment of them admitting that they're aware of what's been going on. They're celebrating, you know, Sunnydale, that the mortality rate is a little bit lower than it usually is. And they're recognizing Buffy and everything she's done for them. It's great because they still think she's a freak. It's not like they're carrying her around and chanting her name. You know, they're still not her friends, but they you know, to borrow a Agent Carter term here, they know her value. And they acknowledge that. And the fact that the fact that this moment to me is not cheesy at all. It's deserved. It's earned. Like for three seasons, this show has earned this one moment. And it's such a nice contrast to something like Homecoming too, which was, you know, they were calling out two homecoming queens and everyone's like, oh, it's gonna be Buffy and Cordy, but in truth it was like the other two girls. So the fact that she gets to have this and the fact that the students let her have this is just to me so great.
It's her perfect high school moment.
It is her perfect high school moment. She gets it. And it doesn't often happen in Buffy that something turns out the way the characters want or even the way it looks like it will. But in this particular moment, I think it was really, really nice that it did.
And at the end of the day, it's just plastic. Snaps that in half. Throws off the crowd.
Sure. Is that a quote?
It was, you know, in the end of Mean Girls, where Katie comes back from the mathletes thing. It's kind of like she shows up late to the prom, just like Buffy does. And then she's still loved and adored by everyone.
Right.
Or that hated.
Moment. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's true.
It started to feel like a lot like Mean Girls there for me, and I appreciate that. I like a good Mean Girls moment in any given thing ever.
Yeah, especially because Mean Girls came after, right? So
yeah. Oh, God, another thing that copied Buffy.
Yep. No. No, but you know, I just love how epic it is. I love how genuinely epic it allows itself to be, and that it manages to pull it off, and that I just think it's beautiful.
And Jonathan is the one to give it to her after she saved him from committing suicide.
I know. It's really a full circle moment in so many ways. Mitch, what was yours? What was your favorite scene? We kind of talked about it a little bit already.
Yeah, mine was the fake wedding and the notebook, because that really would have made the perfect AOL avatar, guys. And I'm sure it did for many people.
It did.
Did you see it a lot? Was that really a common thing?
Oh, yeah. There's a couple of moments of screenshots from that scene. I think the ring on her finger is another one that I saw floating around on forums. Yes. I think on Harry Potter forums, even people were using them.
Shippers unite. There we go.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
We mind melt over here about that. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And Brittany, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was Angel and Buffy breaking up, because I think it was just really well done. I thought that conversation was really mature, and it wasn't Buffy like she finally called him out, being like, stop being so cryptic, which I really appreciated. And then, you know, just the way it was handled wasn't so like, it was a little soapy, but it wasn't, you know, cringeworthy. It made sense, and it, you know, I just, from a writing perspective, it was very well done. And from a not really into Buffy Angel relationship perspective, it was very rewarding to have it be over, even mm-hmm. though it wasn't completely over, because he's still a nice person with a nice soul now, which I don't like. But that's okay.
mm-hmm. Yeah. And Caitlin, what was your favorite scene? And you can comment a little bit on the sewer scene too, if you want to.
My favorite scene since Selena took the class protector moment is...
I mean, it was the best scene of the show.
I teared up rewatching it. I genuinely did. It was so
Me
good.
Too.
But my second favorite moment in this episode is... when Angel shows up at the prom and they dance, and it's just so lovely and sweet. And it's kind of this bit of a farewell at the same time as a, you know, even though we're broken up, we still love each other very much, and we're always going to be here for each other. And their faces, they're so complete when they're together. And I just find that moment so sweet, but also bittersweet. And it's really beautifully done. It doesn't really need any dialogue, and it closes out the episode with just the two of them. And I think it's a really beautiful moment.
I agree. I like how it ends, Buffy and Angel. Like, I go through these things. Like, sometimes I like them, sometimes I think they're too cheesy, but I love the emotional weight of their relationship ending, and I'm totally there with them in this moment. Like, I feel the impending sadness of them, because it doesn't have to end. I think that's what makes it so sad, is that in theory they could just choose not to. It's not like usually in shows where breakups happen for a really good reason. You know, it's like someone cheats on someone, or someone dies, or someone has to go somewhere, or someone is like forced into a marriage to the woman carrying their child, or whatever the hell tropes they use to break couples up on TV. But this is literally just, it happens just because they can't keep going.
Well, knowing that it eventually ends. We still have not only a finale, but we have an entire show called Angel, so... my ship will go on. And
right. It's not to like snuff out hope or anything. It's just to saying that this particular breakup is so affecting to me because
I'm gonna
it doesn't
be there.
Have to end. You know, it's like, and in real
that's
life, that's
saying.
How a lot of relationships end.
So we still have more going on. Like,
it
that
doesn't
is the best
end,
part about it. That's right. The best part about it.
Right, yeah.
So far with this angel thing now, because mm-hmm. they didn't end on bad terms. They ended mm-hmm. with a cute little dance and hopefully a fun sword fight again, because that was cool. Let's do it again, guys.
Right. Well, I think that's sort of like, it is that coming back to that famous quote, you know, the world doesn't end with a bang, it ends with a whimper, you know, and that's kind of how this feels. And that makes it, you know, you have such a heavy heart watching them break up because, you know, ultimately they could just choose not to do it. But they're not. So yeah,
God damn, this is my ship in this show. I didn't think it was going to be because it's so mainstream, but God damn, is it my ship.
Yeah.
I wonder if I can OTP anything else after this. I thought I OTP Puffy. I really did, but Bangel took over. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to take over your OTP like this? Because this is intense, guys. I'm really
I feel you too. I think I always get this way. It's when they break up, I really start to ship them. It's very sad.
It's so twisted.
Yeah.
We like you unhappy better than we like you happy.
Yes. Pretty much. I mean, pretty much.
Yeah.
That is the you know, the weird thing about Bangel, isn't it? So let's see about favorite lines. What do we have? We have one from Brittany here, which is, I love this one.
Yeah, so it's when all the prom talk is going on about dresses and like what people are wearing and Xander getting a tux and whatnot, and Giles says, and I shall be wearing pink taffeta, as chenille will not go with my complexion. Can we please talk about the ascension? He's so sassy, and I love it.
Yeah.
I was sassy, like, I'm sure I watched, like, the, you know, the breakup, and I'm like, oh, there's some good stuff in here. But then I was like, nah, people will be disappointed if I don't choose this one.
Yeah. And Caitlin, what about you?
So mine is when Buffy is telling everyone to go to the prom and she's going to handle the hellhounds. And she goes, I'm going to give you all a nice, fun, normal evening if I have to kill every single person on the face of the earth to do it.
Yay.
And Xander has his little, yay. I love it.
Yeah, me too. And Mitch, what about you?
Mine is when Anya says, I don't have a date for the prom. Xander goes, well, gosh, I wonder why not. Couldn't possibly have anything to do with your sales pitch, Anya. Men are evil. Will you go with me? Because that is me. It is more me than I like to admit, but it's me. And wow, I need more Anya, please.
Amazing. And mine is a beautiful moment of vindication that someone pointed out to me on Twitter, and how could I not pick this one? Giles says, for God's sakes, man, she's 18. You have the emotional maturity of a blueberry scone. Just have at it, would you, and stop fluttering about. Emotional range of a teaspoon, you guys.
I have to admit, it was independent of your comparisons to Harry Potter, it was the first thing that came to my mind. And then I realized that this was once again a thing that, yeah, okay, I'm with you there.
Are you with me? I'm going to compile the ultimate list of ways in which Harry Potter ripped off Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and this is on top of the list.
That
there's
like
no way
this article, is... Now, doesn't it?
Yes. No way this is a coincidence. Absolutely 0% chance that this could possibly be a coincidence. I'm kind of joking, but not really. So yeah, very exciting, and also just a very good line. So there you go. That's everything we had for choices in the prom, and we do have a little bit of listener feedback to get in here at the end. If you would like to send us listener feedback, you can email rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @re_watchable. You can find this post on hyperbole.com. You can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And on iTunes, if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will hand stitch you a beautiful prom dress. And who doesn't want that? I hear she hand stitches quite lovelily. So definitely get on that. So listener feedback now. Mitch and and Caitlin and Brittany, if you guys just want to start going down the list.
Sure. So from Hannah Long at HannahLong831 wrote, Jane Espenson is also one of my fave writers. Was so glad to hear your shout out to her on Rewatchable for Buffy episode Earshot. Smiley
Yay!
Face. Yeah, Hannah, we like her too. We'll keep
her. We love her.
And Laura Morrow at LauraMorrow123 says, ladies and Mitch, Giles is in a new TV show called Guilt on Freeform, and he has an American accent. Check it out. Creepy.
Oh, my God. I still remember when the CW pilot for the selection was canceled. He was meant to play the king in that, and I was so disappointed that he wasn't.
He'd make a good king. I imagine it being really weird having.
King.
I imagine it'd be really weird him having an American accent, much like Daniel Radcliffe.
I watched
like Brotherhood of Men. It's so strange.
Is he good in it?
Yeah. He's good. His daughter is the star of the show.
Oh wow!
So he's playing, you know, her. Her father, but also is her father. So, nice. It's not bad.
It's like Miley and Billy Ray Cyrus, huh?
Aside from that, Balia Beth at Balia Bai says, side note, or maybe made note, I love that Jonathan finally got to be seen. I've been waiting for the episode for a while.
Emmy Foss said, enemies fun fact, the Buffy Faith forehead kiss was supposed to be a full-on proper kiss, but the censors said no. I didn't know this. That's an amazing fun fact. There you go, Mitch. Wow.
Telling you, I know when a shift is happening. No. I feel it. My spidey senses start tingling, and something was going on in that scene, and I knew that was coming. I was like, ooh, God.
I read something about the censors really toning down this, like, the Faith Buffy stuff, but I don't think I ever knew this particular thing. That's really interesting. I hate the censors. God. Ugh, so annoying. Now I'm annoyed. Oh, well. Thanks for letting us know, Emmy. That was a really good one. Caitlin, do you want to stick the final comment from Hypable?
Sure. So Brittany Koza writes us a long, really great comment. She says, couple comments on Earshot. This first one is dark, so trigger warning. So pause. All right. I know you guys, especially Mitch, had issues with the believability of the gun Jonathan was using, especially why he chose that one and how he would have done it with a barrel that long. In high school, someone I knew committed suicide using his dad's hunting rifle, which was very similar to the one that Jonathan had, and he did it by putting the barrel in his mouth. So when I saw this episode, I had no problem believing that Jonathan would have tried using that kind of gun. On a lighter note, when Giles and Wesley are arguing about the demon heart, Giles calls Wesley a Burke. This is Cockney rhyming slang, where you substitute a phrase that rhymes with something, then shorten it, so stairs becomes apples and pears, and then becomes apples. Similarly, Burke is short for Berkshire Hunt. Guess what insult that rhymes with? However, Burke is considered to be inoffensive. This is something I missed the first time I watched this episode years ago, but caught it this time because I did a project on the rhyming slang. So thank you for that, Brittany, both sad and lighter notes.
Yeah, thank you for that. That was a really good comment. So,
and thank you for the trigger warning, because as we were talking about that episode, we recognized how dark that was of a thought. So I appreciate the informational aspect of that, but that is a very sad thing that you had happened close to you. So I am sorry that you have had personal experience in that subject matter.
Rounding off the show now with Mitch's musings for 321 and 322 graduation day. It's so hard. Right. Like, what is this going to be about? I have no idea.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here, guys. All right.
Yes.
No, they're gonna graduate. I know.
What?
I know. I know.
That would be too, like, cliche.
Follow me here. They're gonna walk across the stage. They're gonna get okay. No, what I think is really gonna happen is I thought this was gonna happen in Choices, and I think it did with that whole knife moment. But I think that it's going to come to a point where Faith's going to choose the good side again. Maybe she'll be too late. Maybe Buffy would already killed her, and then she would have been like, "No, Buffy, I was going to kiss you on the lips, but the censor stopped me. You would have known my true love for you." Cuff, cuff, dead.
Cuff, hey, cuff.
And then I think that Cordelia will decide to go with Angel, because she's going to realize that he is a better human being, demon thing, than anyone else on planet Earth, and that she needs to go over there and be a badass with him. Maybe she'll become a vampire. That'd be kind of fun. I don't know. Maybe we'll have a bad vampire that Angel has to rehabilitate, and that's what he does in his show, and that's where he gets his gang started. That would be fun. In terms of the bear, I don't know. He's not going to survive. They're just going to chop off his head and, like, throw him in a volcano or something permanent. They'll find some way to, like, really off him.
They're taking him to Mordor.
Yes.
Mordor. That's fine. Like, One Ring can't survive that. Neither can you.
what other big stuff's going on? So we have Wesley and I guess Kesley that needs to be cut off. So that's because she's gonna become a vampire, and he'll be like, "Oh, I'm a watcher. I can't like that. That's not a thing I can do." And that'll be tragic. And Willow will actually become an awesome witch, and Amy will come back as Adiana, and I were predicting from like forever ago. So, Brittany, do you think I missed anything in terms of being a newbie and not knowing what the hell graduation day is going to be about?
Besides the Hellmouth opening and swallowing everyone whole, I think you pretty much nailed it.
Sure.
Question. Audrey.
Sure. Why the hell not? We will find out.
Enough. I hope she doesn't come back. Please.
Well, we shall find out. We'll find out next week. Hopefully it'll be Karen on that one. I say hopefully as though I really hope she's on a finale, but really it's just because I want to be on the first episode of season 4. But no, I really do hope that she gets to be on an episode soon, because we've been missing her for far too long. So with any luck, you'll be hearing Caitlin's voice next week for Graduation Day Parts 1 and Part 2. Now, I am going to go off and read some synopses of Gilmore Girls episodes. So I hope you guys have a great week, and we'll check back with you next week. My name is Selena.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Mitch.
And I'm Brittany.
All right. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.